Hello, everybody. Today we are going to go through some different topic requests and questions that some of our dedicated listeners asked. And I think you guys are really going to enjoy these questions and the answers that are going to give you some tools to actually take away and go back to your businesses and apply.
All right, here we go. All right, everybody, welcome back to the EJ. I'm here with Dr. Brandon and Chelsea, and we are the group they call the Juggernauts, the Entrepreneurial Juggernauts, here to discuss all things business, entrepreneurship, and diving in and getting the most out of your business and seriously the most out of your life as you build those businesses, build those dreams. So today we have some backlogged listener questions that we're going to dive into a little bit, and some will be brief answers and very easy. Others will maybe elaborate on a little bit and kind of turn into more of a topic, if you will. So we have Chelsea that's going to serve as the host today and read the questions, then we can all discuss and just take it as it goes. So let's have a conversation. Let's hear what those questions are.
Yeah, thank you guys for I know Dr. Jason said these are backlogged for sure, but thank you. We're getting a lot more engagement from all of you listeners who have questions and things to share with us. So we're really enjoying that. And it gives us the ability to give you what you want. So we'll start off with the first question. It's a kind of a two-part question. So what are your tips for building a great team? How do you build trust with your team? And what techniques do you use to support employees who are underperforming? So maybe a three-part question.
Yeah, let's start with the first part. So how do you build a great team? It's tougher now than it ever has been my entire business life, because the talent pool, although is there, they're very sought after. And so there's a lot of opportunities. So you really have to it has to be more resourceful than just putting an Indeed ad out or just looking for somebody. You got to find somebody somehow, some way, through connections, through interviews, but you have to have a better opportunity than most, essentially. And so if you can create an environment that somebody wants to come to, you know, you have to have something that's better than the competition, if you will. So part of that is pay. You know, we've always talked about that's matters. Part of his benefits, that matters, but that's shit anyone can do. The other part is culture. And it's, what are you building? Are you building a place where someone feels like they're further in their career? Is their voice heard? Do they enjoy the people they work with? Do they enjoy what they work on? And so I think, you know, it's like running a little micro business within a business of how do we attract talent and how do we keep that talent? And, I think that it's something you have to do first by creating your culture, two, by getting out and getting a little bit hungry, three, by looking for people in different ways, you know, mainly the people you know, usually know someone that may know someone that's fantastic at this and, you know, and on the market. So I would say my answer to that is get creative. Don't hire out of necessity. Make sure you're bringing people in that are actually someone you want to hire. Even if times are tough, you'll find that person, and the wrong person is going to do nothing but make your life even tougher. So don't settle short term, because you'll pay the price long term, I guess I would say. So that's my points.
Jay, one thing I think you have been really good at and have helped teach me a bit on is finding people that have skills that are better at than I was, you know, stuff that I was good at. What was someone else better at? Chelsea's a good example on the screen. She's better at lots of different things than I was. And if you looked at our whole Inc. team, you hire talent in different spots when it's needed, based around their skill sets, not just someone who is very similar to us, but maybe someone who is way better at marketing or way better at financials or things of that nature. So something good to learn, that it doesn't always have to be you as the leader. Find someone else that's probably better at many things that you're not, and bring them onto your team, and then put them in those roles to take that stuff off of your plate.
Yeah. Another thing too, that I was interviewing the other day, a staff member for one of our offices as for the CA position. And one of the questions I asked early on was kind of like, what is a long-term goal of yours in your career? I know you're not a chiropractic assistant yet, but what would be a goal of yours? And just kind of like she threw out the opportunity for growth. And so I kind of started talking about the different areas where this position can grow into, and you just saw her like really light up. And so I think finding out what people's long-term goals are and being able to pour into that, you know, for them, because that gives them ideas of like what's down the road for them. This isn't just a one and done kind of type of opportunity, but they have room for growth and different opportunities.
Yeah, I think one of the bigger mistakes that's made too, and this isn't just in the chiropractic world, this would be in business in general, is people don't, they want a top level talent like day one. And so they hire expecting someone to do not necessarily exactly what they would do, but pretty damn close, right? Or they lost a great employee and now the next one they hire, they expect just that person to pick up and not skip a beat. And I think that at some point, people have to, their training sometimes is very weak, or what they hold that person accountable to is very weak. But I've seen great people wither away and die in organizations because they weren't really given a chance to shine, right? And so I think when you find that right person, and like when we hire, and we've done this a lot at Inc. too, we hire people that we trust, that we like, that are, you know, we think have a great work ethic, they have great integrity. And I think we can make a badass employee out of that person. And so, or a badass partner out of that. And so I think that so many people don't really dedicate the time and resources needed. And we see it in a lot of our franchise offices. Sometimes they want to bring people on and it's 5 days later, like, this person's not going to cut it. They're not good. They're not doing it. It's like, okay, well, wait a minute. They haven't even gone through training. Like, you never held them accountable. They never dove in. We haven't even done the proper paperwork on them yet. And you're ready to terminate. And so your lack of planning and following through on what you needed on the front end is now an unfair service to this person. And people's lives are at stake. I mean, you have to take that a little bit seriously. Now, if someone comes in and steals from you, then get out, right? I don't care. But if you hire someone, they quit their job, they come on, you can't just dispose of them in 5 days because you didn't feel the instant fit or they didn't have a good first week. Like, you've got to do everything it takes to train this person properly. That makes them feel like they're in a good environment, that they feel safe, their voice is heard. Then I think they buy in at a higher level and it's built. Great employees are built. They're not, rarely are they hired. And I think that's important for people to know.
That maybe feeds into a little bit of what the second or third part of that question, whatever it was, of how do you do that, techniques. And I think our organization is really good at the onboarding side of it, is kind of what you're alluding to, Jay. Like, we actually sit down, explain things, an operating procedure manual to, you know, here's the normal things that go on. And then some type of training, whether that's online or something, before they literally get in front of patients or clients, or build a foundation with them first, because like you said, you can't just throw them in and expect them to whoop ass first day. They got to learn and make some mistakes and build up a bit.
And you'll get those people that jump in first day and are like, ooh, they're better than I thought. Like, those are great. They sure, come along. Sure. And so 1 out of 10, you're going to be like, holy shit, that person, where they've been my whole life. You know, and then 1 out of 10, you're going to be like, how did I even hire that person? What a waste of time. Like, I don't know what I was thinking. But honestly, in the middle is the 8 out of 10, right? And that's the people that need to be developed at different levels. And you got to pique their interest and you got to show them they're appreciated. You know, and if people don't do something, like you said, even if you went over, then the next day they don't do it. You have to hold them accountable. So you ask a question. Hey, Chelsea, I just want to know, like, because that's really important to me, which is why it was in your training. And then I saw today you didn't even do that. I just wanted to ask what your thinking was on why you didn't do that. And if they're like, oh shit, I'm overwhelmed, I forgot, sorry, I just need help, like tomorrow, that's great. That's a good answer. If they answer,
I want to hear Chelsea's answer to that. Chelsea, you want to know why you didn't do the job, Chelsea, can you tell us?
But I mean, you hold her accountable, right? And then Chelsea lets you know. And if the answers are starting to be things like, I don't see the value, or I don't really want to do it, or it's stupid, or I tried a different way after being with the organization for 3 days, sometimes that guy's or girl's giving you signs that they're not going to work out. Whereas if they say and do the right things and start to say, hey, help me on that, that's a good sign that they're heading in the right direction.
So I've definitely talked to a lot of our docs and franchisees who are kind of just like on the fence, where it's like, do you keep pouring into these people? Like, the third part of that question is, what techniques do you use to support employees who are underperforming, besides like accountability? Like, how do you kind of like know if they're worth pouring into more, or if they need to be replaced?
I think you have to, your gut a little bit, their effort a little bit, how good they've been at just showing up and trying, right? Is it matters?
Yeah, I think effort's big for sure. Yeah. Like, if you're seeing, or if they're just kind of like, you see them checked out and kind of giving up on trying even to get better, then yeah, that's a sign that they're well, not.
And ultimately business doesn't reward effort. It doesn't give a shit. Right. And so the try hard thing doesn't matter. There's a lot of people that tried hard that didn't make it in business. Mm-hmm. So, but they're not the ones going in business. And I think sometimes we confuse that. These people are helping you run your business. And so your job is to find that person and then find a place for them or show them the door. And so without sounding cold and heartless, your job is to pour into them. So if you do have to let them go, you know, I tried everything. I set them up for success. They weren't going to work out. And sometimes that's how it works. Majority mm-hmm. of time is I hired them. I trained them half-ass. They didn't perform at record fashion within the first couple of months. So now I think they're not going to work out. And those are two completely different things that people have to, you know, you got to respect them. You got to pour in. I'm not one for like coddling them. They don't mm-hmm. deserve a bonus or a ribbon or something every time they do something they were supposed to. But at the same time, you've got to design this employee to be, someone that wants to work for you. And you have to build that trust and that relationship. So, you know, I think you make the call with your gut, but I think you make that call with your gut based upon what this person did. And then the final question before you shook hands somebody is, can I move them somewhere else? Another organization, would they be great in billing? And right now they're at the front desk. That was a mishire on my part. Would they be great as this, as opposed to this? And you try to help that person out because sometimes you can move them to a great spot that you didn't even think of up front. And if not, then yeah, you gotta rip the Band-Aid off and move forward with somebody that's going to, you know, you're going to build your organization with, because you spend thousands of dollars in investment and hours when you hire somebody. And it hurts. If you burn through five new people, front desk people every year, you go broke. That's $50,000 at least, not to mention lost revenue from clients that were pissed off. So realize it's a major thing. If you can build your team, it'll build your organization.
Yeah.
What else you got, Chels?
All right. Yeah. Next question is, this one's a good one too, and very common. How do you increase productivity without causing burnout? I know not everybody is like wired the same as far as like work drive and work ethic and things like that. And so I know people are always trying to find ways to motivate and increase productivity with their teams, but we often get that, you know, that in our business world, CAs get overwhelmed or just can't keep up or whatever. So how do you know, or how do you do that? Increase the productivity.
I think one thing we talk about, I guess, a lot on here is just creating the systems that increase productivity. So you can still do the same amount of stuff. If you have a great system, it's just much easier, smarter, not harder type of thing. So if you got to tweak little systems on a day-to-day basis, that just naturally allows you to see more patients, see more clients, produce more revenues without doing a ton more work, I think that's where I would start. And we've done a great job of that, I think, of having those systems in place. You can see way more people in our models now than when you and I first started, Jay, because we've just gotten that much better on systems. So that may be the first thing for productivity wise.
I also think like what Jason was saying earlier, like making sure people are in the right spots in that office, because if you're doing something you hate and you're not good at, you are going to get burnt out, even if you only have to do it once or twice that day. But if you're doing something that you're really good at and you're passionate about, I think that you get more excited about doing it. And so you work better and faster and smarter.
Yeah. The easiest way sometimes is to ask somebody what motivates them, you know? So on the front end, you kind of ask, and are they contest, monetary motivated kind of person, or are they the one to fit with the team, or they want to set records, or they want to beat another office and some kind of fun challenge, or, you know, do they want to move up the ranks of your office and one day you work for them type person? Like, I mean, figure out what motivates this person. Mm-hmm. And then you can play to that as you give people tasks and things to do. I think the other thing that, and we talked about this morning with offices, is you can't expect all this above and beyond stuff to happen when you don't even hire enough people to get the bare ass minimum done. Mm-hmm. And we see this all the time with like in an office that needs to have five people, there's two people. And now we're mad at both those people because like we're not even getting to the marketing and you didn't do videos and you're not out and about doing events and things like that. And they're thinking like, shit, man, we barely even like talk to everybody that came in because us two are doing the work of five. And so, you know, it's one of the first things that entrepreneurs do is shrink back to lower overhead for obvious reasons so they can pay their bills or make money. But shrinking to greatness is never been a thing that entrepreneurs that have made it big have ever said. You know, it's more of pour in, hire the team that you need to create an extraordinary business, and then make that team build a practice that justifies that payroll. I've long been a believer in that. I always open with more than enough people. You guys have all been to businesses or practices that are understaffed, and you've said, I'll never go back to that place. It was a disaster. And when you do that, that's the sound of you dying in business, withering away, because you're pissing off people every time you have an interaction, versus going somewhere and they have time. You can tell it's organized. And yeah, it may have cost them a little bit. They may have made a little less or lost a little on the front end. But if it's at the purpose of winning my business lifelong and my referrals lifelong, then I think that's the right thing to do. So I would say hire properly to have people excited and able to do other things other than the bare ass minimum.
Like it. All right. Switching gears a little bit. Our next question is, how do you handle disagreements with your business partner? See, we'll see if Vanessa and Rebecca listen to this episode.
Yeah.
You're right, Rebecca. You're always right.
I mean, Vanessa and I are, as you guys know, we're very passionate people about our business, and we bicker almost in a good way. Bicker may not be the right word. Debate almost weekly, but we like it because Vanessa and I long ago realized we have the same goal. We're heading the same direction. We want to get to the same spot. And so we have different ways of getting there. Sometimes she's more conservative and I'm more visionary. Other times she's more visionary and I'm more conservative. So, but usually when you have a team member like that, you meet in the middle and it makes you ask hard questions, as opposed to being like, we'll make it work. Someone saying like, well, here's the actual dollar signs that aren't here. How do you plan on making that work? Mm-hmm. It makes you put numbers to plans and it makes you be more detailed. And therefore, sometimes you ask yourself questions that you wouldn't just have asked by being excited. So I think respect the other person, know when to walk away. You know, if it's getting to a point where no one's winning, let's revisit this Monday. It's not that big of a deal. And two, I think when you guys know you truly have the right person and you're headed in the right direction, same goal, just realizing your passion, don't misconstrue it as an argument. It's just a different view of going to that goal and achieving that. And so I have been very lucky with my partner in Vanessa. And so we do pretty well together, but those would be my advice on that.
Yeah. I think communication there, Jay, you and I talked about it the other day, you and I were discussing something the other day. I can't remember what it was now. And we're just kind of both said like, yeah, I'll always just shoot you straight. And I'm like, yeah, me too. We'll tell you how it is. And then sometimes we just still disagree on something. That's okay. We're like you said, we're on the same team. We're going the same way. We may have different thoughts, but at least we communicate it instead of bottling it up and being pissed off about something. So.
Yeah. I think making sure the end goal is, you know, the same or very similar, and then having your game plan and it being able to explain why. So the other person can just really understand your thought process. If it's different than theirs.
Brand, you alluded to it also. The other thing is don't let stuff build up. Yeah. So if there's an issue, bring it up. Even if it's small little things are almost often humorous to handle or a really quick discussion. 50 small things over the course of 2 months lead to a really frustrating conversation. So, you know, I think there's always time to, even if you're like, I didn't get why you said that, or I didn't really agree with your opinion on that. And don't take that as an attack. Also be like, oh, I appreciate that. I didn't see it that way. You know? So I think I think it's our society in general, right? Is people get so butthurt by someone that doesn't agree with what they think, what they believe, or what they do. And so everyone walks around with their feelings hurt nonstop. And if instead of that, you actually were like, you know what, that's great. That's a different opinion. I respect that. And I'm better at what I do because other people disagree. And chances are you built your best philosophy or your systems or things like that, that people that didn't disagree you challenged your belief system more than people that did agree with you. And so that's okay. That's a fantastic way for you to develop your personality, your beliefs, your philosophy. And so don't misconstrue somebody's criticism or questions as negative. It's an opportunity for you to relook at things. It may just confirm exactly what you knew. Nope, I'm 100% right. I knew it. All you do is verify that. Often the case with me, that's usually what comes up, but sometimes you're like, shit, I didn't think of that way. And I'm glad I relooked at that. There's a lot of ideas I had that sounded brilliant one day, that probably would have cost me a lot of money had I done it, if I wasn't challenged by the people around me that I, you know, I trust.
Cool. Good job. Good job, guys. Doing great. We're halfway through the questions. So,
all right.
All right. So the next one is, how do you encourage company culture? This is kind of like a broad question. I feel like we could answer it so many different ways, but.
Brandon, we'll start.
You want me to go?
Yeah.
Okay. You were looking at me. I was looking at you. So I think, again, starting with the why, we talk a lot about it, but what's the whole vision of it? Then that kind of creates the culture around the whole thing. So if people have no idea where you're going, and I just had this conversation with another one of my practices the other day, like, here's our bigger vision. As I began to talk with my team, I realized, yeah, they didn't know that. They didn't really know where I was going with it. And that was my fault for not explaining it correctly. When we start to explain it, they get the bigger vision, which then really starts to create the culture of that office, the culture of the company. So I guess that'd be the simplest answer. That's not all Simon Sinek stuff, right? Of getting to your why first so they understand. And then the culture will come from that, I believe.
And then the next part of that would be sharing your why. So that's how people know your culture. And when they know your culture, they can be part of it. So, you know, culture doesn't happen on December 31st when you're writing goals. It's not something you do a couple times a year. Like, your culture is what your, it's like the foundation your business is built on. And so whatever your vision is, it can't just be a mission statement you wrote when you founded the company and then you haven't revisited it forever. Like, if it's not accurate, then change it. And so your vision is what separates you from other people. Your vision is what gives you a chance in making it in this world where 50% don't, where 1 out of 10 thrive. Like, if you don't know where you're going and the team that you put together doesn't know where you're going, you don't have a chance in hell at being successful. And so whether you're a one office owner, a 10 office owner, or you own an empire, you've got to, one, clearly have the vision in your head. What is your mission and what are your steps to play that out? And two, you got to share that with the people that are going to help you do that and make sure they agree with it. And again, back to our last point, if they don't, question it. Let's go back and forth. Let's figure it out, but let's decide on a vision that we can all agree upon. Then we can move forward together as 2, 5, 10, 100, 300 of us versus one or two of us going a bunch of different directions. Then that's a shit show. That's a doom for disaster.
I think, you know, you'll know when this starts to happen. What's the count at now, guys, of tattoos that people have? We have patients, we have doctors, we have employees that have our tattoo, our logo, including myself, tattooed on their bodies. I would say your culture is getting through to people. If someone literally tattoos your business logo on their body, I think that's probably a good sign it's getting through. So,
well, and for individual offices, people even have patients that get the tattoo
of
on their arm or body or whatever. So I mean, that's powerful. I mean, so it's a cool thing to say, but at the same time, that's like someone buying into a vision at such a high level that they're like, I'm in on this. Now, there's people that buy into it at a high level. We have people that work with us that don't have our logo on them, right? That are super bought in. And so that's just one example of it. But the more that they verbalize, you'll see their actions, you'll see their excitement. And then eventually you'll be able to listen to them tell your vision to somebody else. And there's nothing more telling than somebody else explaining your vision to another person. And if you can listen to that explanation and be like, yep, that's great. If you're biting your lip like, oh my God, no, that's not it at all, then you got some work to do. So, I mean, I would challenge you, have somebody else explain your vision back to you and see what they explain. And if you like the explanation, you've done a good job. If not, you got some work to do.
All right. You guys ready for the next one?
Ten.
Bring it.
All right. How can I polish and improve my communication skills?
Chelsea, you take this one.
Me?
Yeah.
I would say the first thing is make sure that your message is clear and you've read over it from kind of an outsider's view, whatever. Obviously, this can be communication to patients, to lots of different things. If you're trying to be a public speaker, whatever it is. And then I think having someone who's better than you at what you're trying to say, listen to it and give you feedback and make sure that, you know, you take that feedback and run with it and make those changes and practice whatever you're trying to talk about. Practice it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, different people on this. I mean, you guys know I don't practice a ton. And I would say the other side of that is believe and love what you're talking about, mm-hmm. and know your shit. And if those two things come together, I could go on stage to, if you said right now, go give a 4-hour dissertation on chiropractic and building a business, be like, great, let's jump on. Right. If you said something about something I'm not real excited about or a thing, I'd be like, then I need to do a ton of research. Then I need to do all this. So I know some people prep for talks way differently. Some people want to practice it and study it, and that's how they teach it and things like that. For me, if you know your shit and you're really passionate about it, you want to organize your thoughts and put it together. I certainly do that before I jump on stage and talk to a group. But at the same time, I feel like that's just the details of putting together my thoughts so it comes out in a chronological order that is inspiring. So that mine would be know your shit and have passion about what you're talking about.
I'll throw in two quick ones. I know you got a couple more. I would ask better questions or ask good questions. It seems to help with communication, and then listen to the answers. And I'm thinking back on patients. When I asked great questions or really listened to what my patients were wanting, my communication seemed to elevate more. It wasn't about just me getting across the message of chiropractic in my sense, but finding out from the patient, their side of it. You got two ears and one mouth for a reason, right? So trying to listen to what they were asking or what they were telling me. Many times they just want to talk and tell them all the stuff we know. But when I found out I've shut up a little bit and listened, it seemed to improve the communication between me and my patients.
What about also, let's take that question, not just like speaking and being like a good, you know, public speaker and things like that, but just having the ability to connect and communicate better with staff members. Same thing. I think you guys have touched on a little bit. You talked about not waiting till the end of the day to talk about like five small things that happened. Mm-hmm. What are some other ways to make sure that you're being a good communicator throughout the day and with your team or your staff or whatever?
I mean, I think you set aside time that's dedicated to that. So whether it's pre-shift, post-shift, right before lunch, after lunch, some time that you can at least like dedicate to that, not just always like in this crazy moment while you're flying by, mm-hmm. You know, blasting them like, say this or say that, or you forgot to mention this or whatever. Like, it's a matter of more like dedicating time. To what Brandon said, the biggest hack, probably not used enough in public speaking, specifically even on one-on-ones, like some people in cocktail parties and stuff, they're so nervous, or job interviews or anything, ask questions. It like gives you a chance to breathe, gives you a chance to process. It puts them on the spot. And sometimes when you feel yourself like, oh God, I'm like just talking and a million things are coming out and I even know, like people dig into that and they get even more and more, as opposed to just taking a breath and being like, I don't know, Chelsea, I've talked about me all night. I'm sorry. Tell me about you. What brings you here? How do you know these people? What's your job? What's your career? Like, and then all of a sudden I'm putting it on you where I can listen. It'll remind me of things I want to said. I can breathe, collect my thoughts. So there's so many times in a conversation with patients, always you want to get Socratic because you want to hear what they have to say. So you know what you have to say, but even less formal than that at a cocktail party or on stage. Right? You can ask somebody in the audience or you can ask somebody questions, even if they're rhetorical and you don't want an answer, it gives everyone a chance to think while you breathe.
Right? Yeah. I think it also keeps everybody really engaged, whether it's one-on-one or a group setting, you know, it gives everybody, like you said, a chance to kind of process what you've already said and be a part of what's going on.
Yeah. Completely agree.
Yeah.
A couple weekends ago, we had all of our doctors gathered together. We do tribe, you know, as our tribe meeting. And I had an opportunity to have a couple over to our house a few days before the event had started. And we're good friends with this couple, but we don't always get to hang out a ton at these meetings. There's just a lot going on. So it's kind of nice to have them over a couple of days early and just sit and have a glass of wine around the fire pit. And I kind of used that technique that you were just saying, Jay. I asked them more about, like, how did you guys meet? Tell me more about that. And I got to learn so much from that one simple question. It turned into all this stuff about where they met and where they used to work and how he proposed and where they got engaged. All this stuff started coming out because they just started talking about themselves. And I learned so much more about that couple that I, like I said, I know well, but I didn't know all that stuff about them. Just by asking that simple question about, hey, how did you guys meet? Tell me that story. And it just opened up this whole
array. Well, there's nothing more annoying than being in a conversation with someone that just talks about themselves, right? So if someone talks about themselves all the time or just their kids all the time, like it's not a fair, it's not a reciprocating relationship. So I want to hear about that, but it's rude to not return that favor, right? And yeah. So there's times where you have to realize, like, it's my time to listen. Now, whether this is with your spouse or with a random stranger or with your corporation, like, you've got to, you're right, you got to listen sometimes. And so, you know, I think it's key to ask questions of other people, give them a chance to tell their story, and then it becomes a conversation versus a monologue that's just going, you know, one way. And no one likes to be talked at, they like to be talked with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sorry. What, right. Was that Jay? I wasn't listening. What'd you say, Jay?
just put your mic on.
All right. Just kidding. Okay. So one of our dedicated EJ listeners is had this last question for us, who was wants to know how to enjoy the successes day to day instead of having a finish line mindset. So having like a great day, you know, in the office or in the business, being able to celebrate that or finding ways to celebrate that instead of just thinking like, okay, yeah, today was great, but we still need to hit that month goal or that end week goal or that end of quarter goal. So kind of like learning how to celebrate the small victories. And we talk about this a little bit, but how can you like change your mindset around that a little bit and also be able to take those pauses with your team to celebrate.
Brian, you want to start on this one?
I can, I guess I don't, this one is tougher for me to understand because I do this all the time. We do celebrate all these little victories, but then I'll never stop thinking about that other stuff. And I think this individual, if I know who you're talking about, Chelsea, is much like-minded as well. Like, I'm always going to want that. What's the next thing? Or what was the next goal? I think that's healthy to have, but just as long as you are celebrating the little things, whether it's just a cracking a nicer bottle of wine or going out for dinner or taking a big trip to Hawaii or something, whatever that reward is, that's easy for me to do. We do that often. So I guess just making sure you're doing that, but then I'm not going to stop on the what's next week, what's next quarter, what's next year's goal. I got to have that in my mind. It's just who I am, I guess.
Yeah. I was thinking about this question when it was asked. And so I don't think I need many victories to keep me going, I guess is my way of looking at this. So it's, I don't want to celebrate daily, weekly type stuff to get to my monthly, annual type stuff. I feel like I have a great life. I'm happy in my life. I love challenges. I love victories, all that type stuff, but I don't look into them all that much. I don't like to analyze every play. You know, I'll take a look at things for the football analogy at halftime, right? And then I'll take a look at things after the game's over. And then of course, throughout the season. But, you know, for me, I'll look at things daily to see where I'm going. As long as I see that I'm headed in the right direction, I feel like I'm right where I need to be. And my whole life is filled with good bottles of wine and traveling and treating myself for working. Yeah, I'm a firm believer that, you know, you work your ass off so you can do stuff that others can't. So I have no problem cracking the better bottle of wine than I should, or driving the better car than I should probably deserve. But at the same time, like, that's what it's all about. And I feel like I'm pretty good at playing the game. So, you know, I think that it's a mindset of like, when I set goals, when you first start, how do I analyze these every day and then not be bummed at myself when I don't hit them? Or then, yeah, maybe you need to do that. But I think once you had done it a while, you'll take a step back from that. And then another step back from that.
Yeah.
You'll start to see things at like a 35,000 foot view. And then you don't need to celebrate every single little thing. You just realize that's just one step closer, or one little opportunity to rework what you were doing anyway and get back on track. So
yeah, I was gonna say something like that. Like, so this person I know is a leader in one of our offices. And so I think what we do at the end of the day and of every one of our offices is our post shift. So we look at the day, and I think, yeah, when you have a kick-ass day and nothing went wrong and everyone was spot on with everything, yeah, the team deserves high fives and maybe a cheers at the end of the day. But they're also just doing their job, like how it's supposed to be done. And then I think when there's days that are less than what they should have been, you take a look at those and figure out, okay, well, if we keep on like this, we're not going to be able to hit those goals. So how could we have done this better? Or what did we learn from this situation? But not necessarily like getting down on it just because you didn't hit the goals, figuring out ways to get, you know, back on track. And, well, yeah.
And one thing I've seen that turns into, I guess this is why I'm not super excited about it, which is probably not the view that everyone thought we would take, but I feel like sometimes people aren't going to hit their goals, so they look for things to celebrate. And so it's a bunch of like, I didn't hit this goal at all, but I did do this, this, and that. We're super happy and proud of ourselves for doing that, Well, you can look at that two different ways. Like, okay, great. I'm glad that you're happy with the progress you're making, but you didn't hit the goal that you set. So if you're happy that you didn't hit the goal, then why did you even set it in the first place? Right. So, I mean, like, let's pick a goal that is like, we want to hit it. We need to hit it. We have to hit this. Not like, it'd be convenient if we hit that, but if not, I'm going to find six other things that went well and call mm-hmm. those victories instead. And so I think so many people get it. And this may be more of like an age thing, for lack of a better term, that I see sometimes is just like, I think sometimes people are, they've been rewarded quite a bit growing up, and that doesn't change when they're in business, you know, and they still want those micro rewards to get through it. Where I don't think that I ever kind of came from that school. I think I came more from the hit a goal, hit the fucking goal, or reset the goal and hit it next month and change shit to get there.
Yeah.
And so, but you don't need to celebrate the things that you did right on your way to failing at a goal, in my mind.
Well, it's kind of like when people are doing like the bare ass expected job, then they're getting like, I don't know, high fives and gold stars, when it's really like, no, that's your job. Like, that's what you're supposed to be doing. If you go above and beyond, yeah, we can celebrate that. But, you know,
yeah,
we don't give out participation trophies.
Yeah, not a bunch of bonuses for doing stuff that is your job requirement, you know, but I think it could be fun. But I mean, I think you want to be rewarded for exceeding that, but not like, hey, here's what I'm supposed to do. I did it. What do I get for that? You know, I don't know. I don't know how that's just an endless game that all of a sudden you're rewarding shit that should have been done anyway.
Yeah.
What's that smirk on your face?
My son has this going on right now. They just played playoffs for football and they lost first round of the playoffs. They're one of the better teams, played shitty that day, lost. So they're done. But then the league's like, you're guaranteed 10 games. So we're going to play the next 2 weeks in the loser bracket. I'm like, oh my God, I don't even want to go play.
Right.
And then my son's like, Dad, do we get like a trophy at the end of the year? I think we get trophy. I'm like, God, I hope not. And he's thinking like, I want one. I'm like, you don't deserve one, bud. And I wasn't trying to be an ass, but just that.
Yeah.
Trophy, like, here's the trophy of the loser bracket. Like, I wouldn't even want that trophy.
I don't want him to have it. I don't want it in my house. I don't want it in the bedroom.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it is. Like, I feel like the young, like my kids, and I know you've told me different stories, Brandon, like that's an example, but like younger kids, like, you know, my kid, I'll tell my kids to go do something. Like, well, what do I get? I'm like, you get fucking dinner tonight. Like, that's part of your job. Like, that's part your chore in the house. Like,
right. You
can do this or that to help out. Like, you don't get allowance for taking the trash out or allowance for making your bed every day. Like, it's the extra stuff that you do to help out, you know? So
yeah. No, I completely agree with that. And athletics is, there's nothing better than the athletic example, and youth sports is that way to a fault. And I actually think it's kind of turning back to the normal way a little bit. But for a while, it was just everyone was a winner. Some leagues did away with like score and playoffs because it hurt people's feelings. And I'm like, what about the people's feelings that are good, that worked hard, right? I mean, so it's like, why take away from somebody that put in three times the work to have a better season, you know, than other people? Why don't they deserve to be celebrated? You know, we're so focused on the losers that we're not focused on the winners. And it's just a different mentality, but I can tell you that pretty much everyone that has a dynamic business is focused on winning. Mm-hmm. And not that I'm the first one to shake someone's hand. If I lose, that's great. That's part of it. No one's ever won at everything they've done, right? The best people of all time. Tom Brady's gotten his ass kicked so many times this season, more than he probably even thought would come. But at the same time, he knew how to respond to that, and it made himself better. And, you know, I think at the peewee level all the way up to pro, you know, and whether it's band or athletics, like, you have to learn from getting beat, and you learn so much from someone whooping your ass. And, you know, Brandon, you've said it many times, it makes you a better wrestler. It certainly made me a better athlete as well. That's where you really learn. Chelsea, you're an athlete too. So I think if we shun that and we're like, oh God, we can never lose, we build a bunch of entitled little whiners that do want to be rewarded for everything. And unfortunately, we have some of those walking around society right now. And back to question one, don't fucking hire them, because they're going to be a huge headache, right? So that would be my number one advice there.
I think, like, even so, this question, like, your big goal, we always talk about kind of breaking down your goals. For me, sometimes I like just like to cross something off or like check mark it and be like, okay, hit that, boom, onto the next one. So you kind of have that like sense of accomplishment, but just for me, I like that visual. I know some people like fill in a chart as they reach different collection levels. So, I mean, find something that makes you feel good about the little things, but stay focused on the big goal or the end goal.
The little things are your way of, because I mean, you can't say, okay, I want to go, I'm opening my practice today. I want to have 10 million in the bank. Okay. Well, there's like such a gap between those two things that you'll get frustrated many, many times. So it's okay then to say, hey, in 10 years, I want 10 million, which means in 5 years, I'm going to need 2.5 million, say, you know, not half, but it's getting there. So in a year, I'm going to need whatever, 500,000, say. Then you start to break that down to what you need to do every month or every week. And then you know, am I getting closer to my goals or not? So I think it's okay to do that. And then don't be devastated if you do hit it or don't hit it. Just realize it's a progress check for, am I headed in the right direction? You know, and so I think for that reason, it's good. Celebrate, sure, if you want to, whatever, toast it or drink it or go out to dinner or something if you need to. I guess then if you're going to fall into that category, then what are you going to do if you don't hit it? Right? Do you go door to door? Do you do something harder? Do you not buy something? I don't know. I mean, if you're going to reward yourself when you hit it, I guess you should penalize yourself when you don't hit it.
Yes.
And then just realize it's nothing more than a tool to get you to that ultimate goal that are written on a regular basis annually. And when you write those goals, make sure that you adjust old goals. But I mean, you're not just working on 1 year goals. You should have 2023 goals. I should know 2028, what I want to do by then. And I should be on 2033 goals. Where do we want to be? Because your little goals build up to your big goals. And that's how you're going to get those big ass goals.
Yep. These are great questions. Viewers, listeners, I guess not viewers, listeners.
Yeah.
These are
viewers good. Someday. Right.
That's your other platform, Brandon. Your OnlyFans.
Yes.
Now, that was good. Love the questions, and I appreciate those coming our way because it gives us some good topics. And so keep those coming. We'd love to talk about those. And you know, 2023, we've talked about it. It's November, right? We started goals in October. We're fine-tuning those things right now to launch. And you know, like I said, not your 1 years, your ones, your fives, your tens. Kind of work backwards and make sure that you're heading in the right direction of where you want to get. But if you don't like where you're at, then you got to change. If you don't like where you're at, you got to get uncomfortable. And you're going to have to do shit that probably isn't easy. And so, you know, I see it every day. People that, oh, I thought it was going to be this. Well, it's not. So what now, right? Are you throwing your hands up, or are you going to fucking toughen up and make it work? And, you know, the people that dive in, like I said, it just makes you better. Everything for a reason, but you'll get there. Just don't lose faith, but also don't give up, and don't look for reasons that it can't happen. Look for reasons that it can happen. So appreciate you guys. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Peace out.